This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest is Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago. We're set to talk markets in just a moment. Now, speaking of markets, World Ag Outlook Board Chairman Dr. Mark Jechanowski talks about the recent rise in imports of wheat supplies by China. Gets it from USDA's Global Outlook.
We raised China's feed use by 2 million tons. It's also consistent with the fact that we've seen China importing a lot more wheat recently, especially wheat from Australia, but also some white wheat from the U.S. China is now the leading global wheat importer, and we raised their wheat import forecast 2 million tons to 12 million. That would be their highest wheat import since 1995-96. So that's an important change here in the global wheat balance sheet.
It's the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James, joined today by Bob Maurer. Bob's with Manduca Trading in Chicago and has a great website, myfuturesadvisor.com. Myfuturesadvisor.com. We'll give you contact information for Bob in just a moment. But as we start our conversation, we're just inching towards that official grilling season. Parts of the country have said, forget about it. We're Sooners. We're starting now. We're starting early. But really, that doesn't kick off until Memorial Day. As we start getting closer to that, are we watching that demand meter for livestock and specifically for beef?
Absolutely. We are continuing to watch that. And so far, it seems like the meter is nearly full tilt and the demand is clearly there. Not only in terms of the U.S. domestic demand, which is robust, but also international demand in terms of our export sales. So things are just kind of driving in all cylinders. And, you know, really what set the table for the robust move that we've seen, because it's been an extraordinary picture on the graph. And, you know, you and I chat nearly week in and week out about these markets. And many times there are moves that, you know, have more volatility and oscillation in them. But this one is just, you look at the chart and you can clearly see back in November, December for the August feeder cattle, for example, or for the June fat cattle. You know, we basically bottomed out, and without that one correction we had that started about a month ago and lasted for a couple of weeks in live cattle, the chart has been pretty robust from the bottom left to the top right of the chart. And really in extraordinary fashion with the live cattle just shaking off that correction that we saw, you know, the first half of the month of March, whereas the feeder cattle have been more of a, you know, bit of a dip here and there, but generally speaking, a nice little 45-degree angle from bottom left to top right. So really, this thing is, these markets are telling you that, you know, the demand is there, the appetite from the packers are there in terms of getting product. Recently, you know, some of the negotiations between packers and the suppliers, that being the feedlots, have been such that they were looking for delivery, you know, as early as within about a week or two. I mean, it's a pretty robust appetite from those who are processing the cattle that turn into the beef that ends up at our supermarkets. So that's definitely good signs and robustness in terms of the fundamentals. You know, that's all shows up in the cash. And when you look at the many different ways you can look at how the cattle trade out there in terms of cash, you can look at the Northern Dress deals. They were up $11 week on week into last week, trading mostly about 290. You look at Southern Live, and they basically traded primarily about 175 on average, which was up $5 from the previous week. If you look at the 5-day, 5-area weighted average price, that was up around $4-ish, four and a half-ish week on week. Strong there. Box beef cutouts ended up around $302.50 from about $291 the previous week. So that's around $11.50 higher-ish. So all those, you know, elements that you can, and different ways you can look at how the beef market is trading up there in cash cattle land, are looking pretty darn strong. And the fact that it shrugged off that mid-March weakness is yet another sign that, you know, clearly the fundamentals are there for this market to be be justified at these prices. Now, nothing cures high prices like high prices. You and I chat about that often, or at least I mention that often. And, you know, I think that there's going to be oscillations in this market. We're going to see some pullbacks like we saw, you know, in those couple weeks in March. That's going to happen. But nonetheless, as long as the supply side of the equation is where it is and the demand side of the equation stays where it's at, I think things look pretty strong, and it's going to be hard to really justify a long and persistent move in the near term to the downside, you know, in this live cattle and the feeder cattle market also. Other things that are impacting it, kind of looking at the slaughter levels. Last week was 613,000 head. That was up from 603 the previous week. So again, evidence of the appetite to keep things moving in terms of throughput and the slaughter. Commitment of traders, those guys who are the big speculators who have to report their size to the CFTC. The managed money traders were buyers of about a little over 7,000 contracts in the latest report, which ended April 11th. And they increased their long position at that time to a little over 92,000. So they're long and getting longer. That's another sign that at least on the spec side of the equation, things are, you know, soundly structurally sound, meaning the chart, the fundamentals, you know, the willingness of these speculators to actually put their customers' hard-earned money at risk, betting on the long side, is still there. So that's all good stuff to the upside. I don't know what's going to come along to really cause some kind of top in this. I'm not a top picker or a bottom picker. It's more of just kind of watching the chart and waiting for some kind of significant failed new high that might offer some kind of glimpse that this thing might fall off. But for right now, I think it looks pretty darn good to the upside, and I can't see why anybody would want to try to fight this. Now, we do have a report at the end of the week, that being the cattle on feed, and I'm guessing at this point that the feed inventory is probably going to stay, in terms of the differential of year on year, about the same as the report back in March, and that was roughly about showing about 600,000 head, 500,000 to 600,000 head less than the previous year. So I think that's going to stay in play in terms of placements. We dipped lower in February than it was a year ago, and I think in March of last year we actually saw a bit of an uptick. I wouldn't be surprised if we see an uptick month on month on that placements number, but still less than last year. And then in terms of marketings, kind of more of a guess there. I think that, you know, the market's current, so I think we're going to see things about stable with last month. So we'll just see how that plays out once we get those numbers. But market looks strong structurally. Let's see how long it lasts.
So, Bob, looking at the charts here, and I've gone back to five-year charts now for cotton, hard red winter wheat, soybeans, and corn. And I know that's quite a bit, and we only have 5 minutes here. But really, since about August of 2020, all of these have been moving higher. Now, if we look at the last, you know, 6 months, year, whatever, we can see those declines. But really, we've come a long way in the last 3 years.
Well, big picture, it's inflation, right? Everything gets more expensive. So if all the inputs for what it takes to produce a grain, an oil seed, cotton, you name it, become more expensive, then the producer is going to need to see some kind of return on the board, right? Now, to your point, there are oscillations and prices move up and they move down. And for a short period of time, you know, things can look a little dicey in terms of the P&L that you're penciling in. But nonetheless, if the board doesn't continue to move up, if producers aren't rewarded for all the hard work that they're going to put in during a growing season, you know, up until harvest and even afterwards in terms of marketing, then they're not going to do it. So the market the prices just generally have to go higher. So I think that's one of the reasons. COVID kind of threw a wrench in a little bit everything as the market was trying to deal with logistics and some of the crazy stuff that happened at the onset and, you know, year and a half, 2 years into it, in terms of trying to get some kind of stability back into some of these inputs and just stability back into prices. But just generally speaking, I think that when you and I are still 20 years from now talking about these markets, I can't imagine the prices being steady where they are today, because I think everything's just going to get much more expensive. So it just kind of shows up in the board. Now, when you dial away from that reality, then it just comes down to what's actually touching these markets at the moment. And I think we got some stories here. I mean, if you look at the drought monitor for the U.S. Dead center, you see what's happening in the southeastern quadrant, that being Kansas in the high plains. And then you look at what's happening in small parts of your state, but a big chunk of the very top part of the panhandle for Oklahoma, then you see that they're looking at some exceptional drought. So wheat has the story, especially with the winter wheat variety, of just not having the moisture it needs to really create the yield that one might have expected or hoped for if you were a producer there. So that's definitely the story that's happening in wheat. And then in terms of oil seeds, switching over to soybeans, it's more a factor of what's happening down in South America and how we're reconciling the record crop that's coming out of Brazil with the horrible crop that's coming out of Argentina, and net, what that's going to do in terms of supply, not just for soybeans, but in particular when you're talking about Argentina, it's about soy meal, and then it's going to be whether or not any of that spillover demand that Argentina cannot satisfy that it normally did will come to the United States. So the monthly supply and demand report that came out on Tuesday, the USDA lowered Argentinian soybean production to 27 million tons from 33. So they went down to 27 from 33 in the March update. The Rosario Grain Exchange, the ones who are down there, they actually put their production forecast closer to 23 from 27. So their high water mark is what the USDA's low water mark is right now. So really, there's a 10 million metric ton differential between the highs and the lows of those two numbers. And it's really kind of interesting to see how that all plays out. And I guess we won't know until time actually evolves and we see what actually comes out of there. But, you know, those are just some of the variables that are happening. You can look at the picture here in the United States with wheat. You can look at the picture of soy meal and soybeans down in South America. And those are some of the things that are being put into the price. And those are the major storylines. So we'll just see how they evolve. Continue to watch export sales, watch some of the basic demand stuff that we see. Keep an eye on energy prices and the dollar, and try to do our best to trade accordingly.
Okay. Speaking of that, if we want to talk one-on-one, can we call you?
Absolutely. Pick up the phone. Give me a call. Number is 312-987-2053. You can also reach out by email at bmauer@manducatrading.com or come visit the website at www.myfuturesadvisor.com.
Bob Mauer, Manduca Trading Chicago, on today's Agribusiness Report.
When it comes to farming in dry conditions, the formula for success is simple. Put strong in, get strong out. That's why growers looking to improve yield potential while protecting their bottom line rely on dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Bred, tested, and made tough to handle the toughest growing conditions. Stay strong this season. Plant dry, tough, dryland cotton varieties from Delta Pine. Always read and follow IRM where applicable, grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
Welcome back. You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Bob Mauer, Manduca Trading Chicago.
Life doesn't come with guarantees, but working with Rob Seco comes pretty close. Our strategic investments in the seed we offer are designed to directly improve your bottom line. From full trait platforms, breeding and development, to field-by-field planning and seed-driven crop inputs, with Rob Seco, you have precisely what you need to improve plant performance and increase yield. Every farm, every crop, and every acre. Learn more at robseco.com.
Texas Corn Producers serves the state's corn farmers through both the Corn Board and the Association. The board is putting your checkoff dollars to work in research, promotion, and education to ensure producer profitability and market expansion. The member-supported association is the farmer's advocate in Austin and Washington, D.C. on issues from the Farm Bill, water and property rights, and more. Join the Texas Corn Producers Association today and get the latest news and information about Texas Corn Producers' efforts online at www.texascorn.org.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. Again, special guest Bob Maurer, Manduca Trading, Chicago, online at myfuturesadvisor.com.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turn roads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Ranchers, I will see you at the 2023 Hemphill County Beef Cattle Conference, April 25th and 26th in Canadian, Texas, sponsored by Capital Farm Credit. Tucker Brown here of the R.A. Brown Ranch, and as a young rancher, I'm excited to hear the nationally known speakers, see the 85 trade show vendors, and eat some amazing beef. Register today online at Hemphill County Beef Conference website or call 806-323-9114. That's 806-323-9114.
It's the Agribusiness Report.
Minor adjustments made in USDA's April world wheat production forecast. As World Agricultural Outlook Board Chair Mark Jekanowski explains,
kind of truing up based on most recent, oftentimes final government data from most of the global wheat producing countries.
In addition to a rise in global wheat production, there were notable changes to the world balance sheet. Most noteworthy,
we raised our global feed use forecast by 1.8 million tons. That reflects in part a big increase in feed use in China.
With China importing wheat from both the U.S. and Australia, the U.S. wheat supply and demand ledger reflected minimal changes. Monthly adjustments lower for feed and exports, increasing ending stocks.
The current wheat season average price forecast is now at $8.90 per bushel.
Down one dime from the previous month. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.